Mark Emmer joins us on Sports Byline USA. He is the president of the NCAA and previously the president of the University of Washington, his alma mater, and he is the perfect guest to have on Sports Byline to talk about the Penn State situation from both perspectives. And I want to start, Mark, from the perspective of being the president of a university. I'm just wondering, when you look at what happened at Penn State from an institutional university standpoint, what is it that surprises you the most, and can you put it into perspective for us?
Well, first of all, always good to be with you, Ron. But, you know, this whole case is so shocking in its magnitude of the alleged misbehaviors. It's very hard to be unemotional about it and to kind of peel it back and see what is really going on here. We certainly have to make sure that we have the facts straight. And I've read the 23-page grand jury report, and it's pretty despicable. And then you look at the potential magnitude of the challenges inside any one institution, and it's a big difficult issue to unravel. But as a university president, you know, I'm sure most university presidents woke up the next day and said, "Wow, what can I do to make sure that I don't ever have this kind of problem occur, where people, whether it's taking advantage of children or any other kind of really deplorable behavior, that this doesn't rise to my level to where I can hear about it, and people deal with it appropriately, and it's handled as aggressively as possible. We all worry about how you manage an organization culture, and so from my vantage point, I'm left scratching my head saying, if those allegations are all true, how did this go on for so long without being brought to everyone's attention in a way that someone thought to do the right thing, which was pick up the phone and call the police? I know a number of these individuals, Graham Spanier, the university president, someone I've known for 20 years, Ron, a very well-respected guy, one of the most respected university presidents in the country. His athletic director was widely regarded as one of the most honorable and professional guys in the business, and, of course, Joe Paterno is an icon. So to have this occur anywhere would be mind-numbing. To have it occur at a place that's so widely regarded as having the right values and doing things the right way is really, really cause for concern.
Two questions that I would have, Mark. You know as well as I do, when the NCAA has come down on schools for breaking the rules in their athletic departments, somewhere along the line, they always ask the question about institutional control. In other words, did they not show the right institutional control with the violation? If indeed that's the case that they look at athletic departments, what about who oversees the university in itself about institutional control? Because obviously there was a complete breakdown in that area for the institution itself.
Yeah, ultimately this is the board's and the president's job. That's what we saw when Graham Spanier stepped down. He issued a statement and said, but at the end of the day, this buck stops at my desk, and so the board. And he obviously agreed that that was an appropriate thing to do, but it also points out the problem of any one individual, any one program, any one department becoming, in their own minds, bigger than the institution, bigger than the role of a university. Universities, especially public universities, belong to the residents of that state, not to a football coach, not to a president, not to an AD. They have a responsibility to the citizens of a state, and the board is the representatives of those citizens. President's got to always be responsive to them, and everybody underneath them has to be responsive to that president. And when people decide that they're going to take things into their own hands and manage them in a different way than we all know is the proper way to handle them, which appears, and again, these are all allegations at this point, but appears to have been the case here, then someone's got their values all turned around.
Is there a dynamic in play here with this story? Because, I mean, if you think about it, it's the worst possible thing that can be done with an institution that was so good, so well-respected, with a coach that was so well-respected. Are we talking about a dynamic here in which the tail is wagging the dog, that football became even bigger than the university, and everybody turned their head the other way, even over something as bad as this, Mark?
Well, that's what we have to find out. As the facts become better established and we know what really transpired, then we've got to stop. As the emotion comes out of this a little bit, we've got to stop and say, how in the world can this happen? And how can people that, again, are recognized as leaders in their fields, how can they wind up in this kind of a predicament? And what lessons do we have for the rest of society overall? I don't think this is... In fact, sadly, history has made clear that this is not an athletic issue per se. We've seen children abused wherever we have circumstances where someone can take advantage of power and trust, and then there's a system in place that protects the perpetrator from the public's eye. And we've seen it, of course, in religious organizations and in other kinds of formal organizations and educational settings and now perhaps in an athletic setting. What is it that creates a circumstance by which that can be protected and insulated from the kinds of oversight that we all know is got to be in place? That's a deeply disturbing issue, but one that we've got to get our arms around, and the NCAA has a role to play in that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, as the president of the NCAA, is there anything that they can do or will do, or is this left up to the individual universities to police themselves and make sure something like this does not happen?
Well, we have to make that determination in the coming weeks and months as this sorts itself out a bit. But, we don't have bylaws that govern this kind of an issue, right? No one, in thinking about how you conduct athletics, sits and ponders whether or not this kind of circumstance should occur. But we do, as you note, have rules about institutional control. We have rules about ethical behavior. If we hold a coach accountable for being less than forthright about some recruiting violation, surely this is dramatically worse, and we need to decide whether or not we want to, as an athletic association, hold someone accountable. Clearly there's criminal issues here, there's probably civil issues involved, and then on top of that there's the role of the NCAA, and we've just never faced anything like this, so we'll have to figure it out as we go along.
Mark Emmert is with us. He is the president of the NCAA, previously president of the University of Washington, his alma mater, and I knew he was going to be on with me. That was before this story broke about Penn State. So I want to move on to the other thing we were going to talk about, and that is what came out of the meeting, the council meeting with the presidents, about the monies that are going to be made available to cover the entire cost for athletes. What was the final decision made on that, Mark?
Yeah, coming out of this, I held a presidential retreat back in August with a little more than 50 of the leading university presidents in Division I from around the country. We met, spent a couple days together, came out of that meeting recognizing that we had a lot of very serious issues to deal with. We focused in two areas. The first is making sure that student-athletes are just that. They're students who happen to be athletes, not the other way around, and that we set the appropriate academic expectations for them and hold them accountable for that, and that we provide them with the resources they need to be successful, recognizing the very, very large claims that are made on their time and energy. And so we elevated the initial eligibility requirements, the kind of grades you have to have coming out of high school to be eligible to participate in the NCAA. We created for the first time an academic eligibility standard for participation in any of our postseason tournaments, whether it's the men's basketball tournament or a bowl game or any tournament that we hold, all of our Division I tournaments. And then we also said we want to make sure that students are getting a fair break in terms of being able to cover their legitimate costs of attendance. And that's where we passed a rule that said on a conference-by-conference basis, you can add up to, but not to exceed, $2,000 or the full cost of attendance, in other words, the legitimate cost of going to school, to the size of a scholarship for a student-athlete. And it's important for your listeners to know that this has nothing to do whatsoever with pay-for-play. It's been widely confused in the media. People think, well, this is the beginning of a movement toward pay-for-play. I and all the presidents are adamant that that will never, ever be the case. It's completely antithetical to what collegiate athletics is about. But we do want to make sure that our student athletes who are putting in 35 to 42 hours a week playing their sport, often 12 months out of the year, they can't work part-time jobs. How can we make sure they can afford their costs of school? And that's what that change was about.
Mark, one of the things I heard from a head coach of one of those mid-major football schools when I was talking to him, he said, you know, Ron, he said, it used to be that I was asked, hey, coach, how many times are you going to be on television? He said, now I'm assuming I'm going to be asked, coach, of that $2,000, how much are you going to be able to give me in order to cover my schooling, since it's going to vary from conference to conference, as you indicated? Is that going to become a recruiting tool that's going to allow some schools to have a benefit, an extra benefit in recruitment?
Well, I sure don't anticipate it being so, because right now the financial gap in terms of the resources available to athletic departments across all of Division I is huge, much bigger than people realize. So if you look at the lowest funded, lowest resourced conferences, they spend somewhere around $45,000 a year per student athlete for everything, for coaches, for scholarship support, academic support. So they're at $40,000, $45,000. At the highest end, they're spending four times that, $140,000, $150,000, $160,000. So when you're already at $80,000 difference in the funding of a program, another $2,000 is not the variable that makes the difference. And what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're spending resources on students. You know, we've watched coaches' salaries explode. We've watched locker rooms and stadiums become very, very elaborate facilities. We've added more and more non-coaching staff. But the model for student-athletes hasn't changed in 40 years in terms of their support. So I understand people saying, gee, I don't know if I can afford that. But then at the same time, they're paying a coach $1 million or more, and so you need to decide, well, where are we going to spend our dollars? Are we going to put it in a fancy locker room, or are we going to support our student athletes?
We only have a couple minutes left, Mark. And the other thing, and maybe you can clarify it for me, was there some discussion and a decision made as to how long the scholarships were going to be? Because as it stands right now in college athletics, each scholarship is renewed on a yearly basis. What is happening in that area?
Yeah, another good question. So, again, trying to make sure that we provide student-athletes with some greater stability and allow them to focus on their academics as well as their athletics, we said, again, as an option, nothing's mandatory, but the rules right now, NCAA rules right now, say it can only be a year-to-year scholarship. We changed it so a school, if they want to, can go up to 4 years. They can make a four-year commitment, which is not uncommon among other scholarships as well. So schools can choose to do that. They're going to have to make their own decisions, whether they go to 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. That's up to them. But the whole thrust of this was to provide more security and more stability to our student athletes. Then the second piece out of this, Ron, that I didn't mention is that we're going to be spending this spring, the rest of the winter and spring, straightening out the rule book and adding a lot more teeth to our enforcement model to go after people that are actually undermining the integrity of the game. But we can talk about that next time I'm on.
Yeah, in about a minute that we have left, Coach K made a comment, and I'm sure you probably saw it. He said that with the movement of teams from conference to conference and schools from conference to conference, that at some point maybe some of these schools are collectively they may leave the NCAA. How troubling is the jumping from conference to conference to you, Mark?
Well, there's some elements of it that are troubling, not because they might leave the NCAA, but because they need to be doing this for the right reasons. And many of the movements, I'm sure, were done thoughtfully and carefully, and I know all the people that made those choices, and they did them for good, sensible reasons. Some of it was near panic in fear of being left behind out of a BCS conference or concern about what another conference might do, and so there were defensive maneuvers, and too much emphasis was being placed on just media contracts. We have to worry about when we're flying a young man or young woman or a whole team three-quarters of the way across the country to play a Tuesday night volleyball game, and they got to be in class Wednesday morning. What is that? What's the reality of that for a young person? Now, those are the things that I'm worried about.
Mark, I want to thank you. As always, very insightful comments and insight from you. Please come back and join me anytime here and use our forum on Sports Byline. Take care, Mark.
My pleasure, Ron.
Fine, president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, with us talking about a myriad of things, including the Penn State situation. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.